positive enlightenment. All you need in one place, here at HRNradio.com.
Hi, this is Russell Friedman on Moving Beyond Loss on HealthyLife.net Radio, and I'm very excited. This is December of 2014. Can you believe it? This year has literally flown by. But it also marks a very exciting time for us at the Grief Recovery Institute, because just this week, our fifth book has been published and is available at Amazon and other booksellers and at our website, www.griefrecoverymethod.com. And the title of the book is The Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss. And although it's our fifth book, the reality is it's a book that has been writing itself for 37 years. A big part of this new book is actually a foundational part of the original Grief Recovery Handbook that John wrote and self-published back in the mid-80s. It's a book that helps you know what to do. You don't need any help in knowing how you feel. You know how you feel, and if you're dealing with the death of a pet, you probably aren't feeling very good, sad, heartbroken, devastated, frustrated, any word you want to pick. But knowing what to do about that and knowing how normal it is to feel that way is part of what this book is about. But the book also helps you discover and complete what might have been left emotionally unfinished for you by the death of your pet. And it's also an excellent book for those of you who are not the direct grievers, but maybe have friends or family who have been smitten by the loss of a pet. And it will help you learn better ways to talk to them, better ways to understand what's going on, better ways of being a friend or family member in support of someone who's having a very difficult time. And as we're on that, just before we go more deeply into the book, and because it's December, and of course this period of time with the holidays before and after, with Thanksgiving and even Halloween before, and then Christmas and Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and then the New Year, and even then, a month later, we get to Valentine's Day. And all of these holidays are grief-related to the degree that any time we're at a family gathering, it's obvious that people may be missing, people who used to be there who are no longer alive, people who used to be there, but there have been divorces that have split families up and some of the connections. Animals who used to be there are no longer there if they've died. And each of the chronicling holidays is a reminder or stimulus about someone not there. So I want to just take a few moments before we move into the pet book and talk about how normal it is to feel sad, lost, isolated, confused a little bit around the holidays, even if you're surrounded with people. You can be a room full of people, and because someone is missing from that gathering, and even if it's been years since they died, the stimulus of a family event will make your brain and your heart and your soul go to that missing person, so you can indeed be with a bunch of people and still feel alone. One of the things you can do is to just talk a little bit openly about how you feel. You know, I'm sitting here with all of you, and I appreciate that, but a part of my heart isn't here just at the moment as I remember my mom who's no longer alive, or my dad, or whoever. And by vocalizing that, remove the preoccupation from it so that you can participate more fully in the goings-on. But you will also do others a favor by making the topic safe, so other people say, yeah, me too, I miss so-and-so. And sometimes that spurns a great conversation of memories, and really happy memories, fond memories, and even sweet and sad ones, so that the topic isn't secret, because it can really become like the pink elephant in the living room, nobody talking about the thing that's on the back of their minds and the back of their hearts. And by openly talking about it just a little, again, we're not talking about dwelling on it. We're not talking about a pity party or sympathy. We're just talking about being a little bit straightforward, establishing something as truth, which actually creates a great communication between people. And then from that, getting the freedom to be open on all the other things going on at that event and in the world today, and allows you the freedom to be a little more open. We also want to encourage everyone who isn't directly grieving during this holiday time to be more aware of those who are. One of the images we'd like to impart is for you to think about. A lot of people will put on a face and try to look good and act like they're fine. But what you have to imagine is a couple of arrows, like old-fashioned bow and arrows sticking out of someone's heart, but you can't see them. And again, because of our socialization, a lot of us will try to cover up the pain, cover up the feelings, not show it, and attempt to look good, look strong, look fine. But the truth is, if they're hurting, one of the best things you can do is be a little sensitive. Not probing, you don't have to be a therapist, you just have to be a little sensitive and just acknowledge if they say something or indicate that they're hurting, say, yeah, I can imagine this is a hard time for you. Instead of telling them they shouldn't feel that way, we think perhaps the worst thing you can ever do to someone who tells you they're hurting is to tell them not to. It's like someone says they feel bad and you say, oh, don't feel bad, tomorrow's another day. But tomorrow isn't here now, and I don't know for sure I'm going to feel better tomorrow. All I know is right now I don't feel good, and I just need to be heard. I don't need to be corrected and told that I shouldn't feel the way I feel. Because then the next thing you know, if I tell you I feel good, you're going to tell me, you shouldn't feel good. Maybe tomorrow you won't. And I'm going to go, whoa. And you wouldn't do that. That sounds silly. What we need to remember is that all feelings are fleeting. And that is not to minimize them, but they go through and they will pass through if you are allowed to communicate them and then let them go. I'm feeling a little sad today. Thanks for listening. That's all I need to say. I'm just feeling a little off my game. Thanks. I'm having one of those days, you know? Yeah. And everybody can relate. And that way we can kind of have a straightforward communication without minimizing the feelings and without giving them more credit than they deserve. Every feeling deserves a hearing, and that's it. But the hearing is the key. So as a friend of anyone who is struggling during this holiday time, just give them your ear with your heart attached so they know that you heard them. Now, if they want to dawdle on and talk in detail, say, you know, I'm sorry, you know, I appreciate that you're hurting, but I'm really not equipped to help you beyond recognizing that I hear you're hurting. And that way, you know, hopefully they'll go get some professional help, either it's a grief recovery method or a therapist or whatever other spiritual help they may need. But your job is to hear them. Because let's face it, if something happened to you, what you would want most is to feel heard. Okay? Grieving people need and want an opportunity to talk about what happened and their relationship with the person it happened to. Now, that's in the beginning. But years later, it's just about being heard to acknowledge, you know, my mother, as fate had it, died the day before Thanksgiving. So Thanksgiving has been a different holiday for me for these last 20 years. And I always take the opportunity to say, you know, today I need to toast my mom. I miss her, you know. And that usually starts a great conversation at the dinner table because everyone wants to talk about some people are missing. And it isn't macabre. It isn't heavy. It isn't morbid. It's actually sweet because some of the stories come out are so heartwarming. And it actually can be festive talking about remembering people you love instead of not talking about them, keeping a lid on it. So enough of that for now. Just keep all that in mind. And you can go on our website at www.griefrecoverymethod.com. And while there, you can find our articles. One of my favorites I wrote years ago was called Uh-Oh, It's That Time Again. And it talks about the degree of difficulty being at holiday gatherings and especially the first year after someone meaningful to you has died. So you'll get some great tips for yourself as a griever or for friends and family who may be struggling. So now to the big exciting topic of the day, the month, the year, the publication and release of the Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss. It is a full-fledged book, 150 pages approximately. It is the process or method of actions lined out for you to take to help you discover and complete what's emotionally unfinished for you and your relationship with your pet who has died or a pet that you've lost or had to give up. Some people have pets run away. They may or may not be dead, but you don't know. That can affect you, obviously, massively. Also, some people, when their lives change, circumstances change, and they have to move away from where they can have a dog or a cat or other animals, they have to give that pet away. And that is massively heartbreaking. Different than death, but still heartbreaking. And all heartbreak is perceived at 100%. And since we don't compare loss, we don't say one is worse or better than the other. It just hurts, and pain hurts. Now, it may seem strange that here, 37 years after John W. James founded the Grief Recovery Institute, that we have a book on pet loss. And yet, the foundation of the pet loss book is in the very first book John wrote, the Grief Recovery Handbook, which was written on his typewriter and published in, put together in his garage. It was self-published. And it was essentially focused on the death of people. It wasn't even focused on divorce or other losses, and it wasn't focused on pet loss. But, capital but, big but, the first illustration in John's young life that set him up incorrectly for dealing with grief for much of his life until he was able to recreate the right way to save his own life was the first loss he ever experienced that he recalls. And he was about 6 or 7 years old, and his dog Peggy died. And Peggy was his heart and soul. Peggy was his life. Peggy was his safe place. John grew up in a very awkward, I suppose in today's world we would call it a dysfunctional environment. Mayhem all around, and the only safe entity wasn't his mom, wasn't his dad, it wasn't his brother, his older brother, it was the dog Peggy. Peggy was the entity he could talk to, say everything to, feel comforted by, feel safe with, trust, be trusted, nobody else. So when Peggy died, and John was about 7, and his family said to him, and he was crying, as you can imagine, and his parents said, don't feel bad, on Saturday we'll get you a new dog. It didn't help John. Why? He did feel bad. And someone telling him not to feel bad didn't make him not feel bad. It made him feel worse. It made him feel as if there was something defective or wrong about him for feeling sad. Because the adult authority figures, his parents are saying, don't feel the way you feel. Well, how do you not feel bad when someone you love dies? I mean, It's absurd. I mean, I know John has spent 37 years, I've spent 28 years trying to just explain away that myth, the idea that we're told not to feel bad when we do. It's like, huh? And if you can't feel bad when someone important to you dies, then when can you feel bad? It's like feeling bad is off limits, which is exactly what happened to John. He's 7 years old and he's being told, don't feel bad, and if you're a good boy on Saturday, we'll get you a new dog. Now, imagine a 7-year-old with a broken heart that his dog died, okay? Does he want another dog? No. What does he want that he can't have is to have Peggy back, you know? And even at 7, he was old enough and smart enough to know you don't get someone back after they die, even though he was young, but he still didn't want another dog, okay? And yet the family did go out the following Saturday and get him a new dog. And if you ever see John, talk to him about it. Ask him about the other dog. He said, I couldn't make a relationship with that dog. I gave it to my younger brother. And somehow instinctively, John at 7 didn't know he was going to grow up to create the Grief Recovery Institute or write all these books. He just knew he felt horrible, and he knew he didn't want to put his heart on another dog and get hurt again. He knew that instinctively. He might not even have had the language at the time to communicate that. He just pulled away. He knew. Okay? And if you think about it, it makes sense. Your heart is broken. You feel terrible. And yet the adults and other authorities around you are telling you, don't feel the way you feel. You shouldn't be feeling that. Okay? And they said the same kind of things. All of you don't feel bad. Feel grateful you had him as long as you did. Well, I'm sure John was grateful. But do you ever get enough of someone you love? No. So here's John, surrounded by loving people with bad information. Okay? Don't feel bad. Go get another dog. And it didn't work for him, because replace the loss doesn't work for anybody. Imagine if your mom died and someone says, don't feel bad, go get another mother. They're not going to do that. Or when your grandpa dies, one of the losses you're liable to have as a child is death of a pet, but you're also liable to experience the death of a grandparent because of the age issues. So can you imagine saying to a kid, don't feel bad, and when your grandpa dies, don't feel bad, just go get another grandpa? That isn't available. And it proves how wrong the idea of go get another dog is. On the other hand, Relationships are not replaceable. Even if you could find another older man equivalent in age to your grandfather, it wouldn't be the same because he would not be the same, or she, if it was a grandma. Well, dogs have personas and personalities too, as do cats and horses and other animals of various kinds, all kinds. Minor birds have personalities, for crying out loud. Funny ones too. And so the issue here is the fact that someone tells you not to feel bad doesn't make sense. It's just illogical, because you do. And replace the loss makes no sense. Now, I was thinking about this earlier today. When I was a kid, someone stole my bicycle. And my bicycle was hugely important for me. I had a paper route. It's how I earned money beyond my little allowance that my parents gave me. And I had saved up a lot of money to buy a very special bike, and then I had customized it. I had various things that, I don't know if y'all remember, I don't know if any of you are old enough to remember, when off the handlebars of the bike, through the little holes in the rubber handles, little streamers, they were like blue, red, yellow plastic, a stream, it just gave a look. And I had various other things I'd done to customize the bike. So rather than just being a bike, it was my bike. So when it got stolen and someone said, don't feel bad, it was only a bike. No. It wasn't only a bike. Now, it didn't have the personality issue that a dog or cat might or a human would. But it had its meaning to me. It had its personality to me the way I'd made it. And the loss was massive for me. Plus the anger I had at someone stealing it, taking someone's mind, all the feelings that evoked. And yet my parents, you know, like most, said, don't feel bad, I'm sorry to reach a new bike. And that replacement loss didn't work because the bike and I had kind of a personality together, if you will. I know that may sound a little far-fetched, but it isn't really. I know over the years I've made kind of a connection with my cars. You know, you spend a lot of time in your car, and I've even named some of my cars. I know a lot of people do it. And it's not weird or odd or peculiar. It's just kind of a normal, natural thing to have a connection to the things that are important to you that you spend time with. But let's get back to the pets. It's the nature of our relationship with an animal is different and unique than most other relationships. It's not the easiest thing in the world to explain, especially when you realize how many grieving pet owners who are devastated by the loss are not comfortable with their own families, spouses, or friends. There are people who don't get the connection. They literally can't understand, why are you so upset? It was only a dog. Only it. Now listen to that. It was only a dog, not she was only a dog, or Fido was only a dog. They depersonalized, so it was only a dog. So the very first chapter of the Grief Recovery Handbook is for pet loss is entitled, Don't Feel Bad, It Was Only a ... And that's where you, as the grieving pet owner, are going to go, dog or cat or horse or parakeet or whatever pet of yours that died. And I don't have to tell you, if you've ever had a pet die and you heard those kind of comments, how devastating it is for some other human being to minimize your loss by saying it was only a pet. You know, it's interesting. I was thinking about that earlier today, too, thinking about this show and thinking, wow, the depersonalization of your grief by making an it pronoun rather than he or she. Whereas if your mother died, they wouldn't say, don't feel bad, it was only a woman. Now, in that first page of the book, it also talks about that. What would it be like if your mother died and said, oh, don't feel bad, she was only a woman? You would get a gun and shoot him. You would be livid that someone insulted your mother and you and everyone on the planet by saying, she was only a woman. Can you imagine someone saying, don't feel bad, she's only a woman, just go get another mother? It's an insane construct. And yet, grieving pet owners get it all the time. Don't feel bad, it was only a dog. How bad does that get? It gets worse. I can't even tell you with a calculator how many thousands of calls I've gotten from people over the years where they had a pet die. A pet that was their heart and soul, a pet they loved beyond words. And the next day had a well-meaning family member or friend show up with a puppy or kitty, or what any other animal, and replace the loss for them. And we happen to know, and this is a scary, sad fact, a tremendous amount of those dogs, cats, and other animals wind up in shelters and get euthanized because of the people who... Imagine someone bringing you a new pet the next day, and you haven't, your heart is broken, you haven't had a chance to deal at all with the impact of the death of this incredible relationship, and someone gives you a new pet. You can't, just like what happened to John when he was 7, couldn't do it. And John's reaction as a kid is the same as anybody's reaction might be as an adult. You know, think about it. If you had a spouse, and let's say your spouse was killed suddenly in an auto accident, devastating. The next day someone says, oh, here, I brought this woman by for you to date. I mean, again, you'd get homicides. Are you crazy? And yet we live in a world that has taught us don't feel bad, replace the loss. And it's a crime. And we're going to talk more about that when we get back. We're having a little break, but don't you go far away.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
Hi, welcome back. This is Russell on Moving Beyond Loss on HealthyLife.net Radio. And as always, don't forget our website, www.griefrecoverymethod.com. Those can be life-saving call letters for you or people you love if they're struggling with grief in a world that doesn't seem to give grievers much time. And when they do, they don't necessarily have the right things to say to help them. We're going to do something interesting today in the other segments of the show. We're going to have kind of a webinar for one. It'll be me and the rest of you out there answering real questions that we got on our from our blog on tributes.com. Real grieving people with pet issues that you will be able to go to tributes.com by the time you hear the show and listen to the actual webinar. So you're going to hear some of the same answers or variations on them that you will hear there, and maybe in more detail there. But before we get there, I want to address two things to set us up. One of the chapter headings of the Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss is, your pet never said you were fat, ugly, or stupid. And that's one of my favorites. It's got a humor in it, even though the book is essentially about grief. But it explains in a silly sentence part of why we are so connected to our pets. Why people use the phrase unconditional with pets more than in almost any other relationship, you know, not to compare that. Why does someone say they had a bond with their pet? Why do they say they were so devastated by that? They will often tell us they felt more devastated by the death of their pet than the death of their parent or their spouse. Now, we know they don't mean that exactly. We know they're trying to tell us the depth of feeling. And, of course, we don't do comparison anyway. But essentially, that silly line that the pet never said you were fat, ugly, or stupid kind of creates why it is so safe to tell every feeling you have. Most anybody listening to us today or listening at any point has had the kind of thing where you tell your pet everything. Things that you won't necessarily tell your spouse, your child, your parent, your friend. Maybe you'd feel silly, but you can be not romantic, but you can be as humanly, emotionally open as possible with a pet because you know they're not going to judge you. And the idea of not being called fat, ugly, or stupid is the idea that the pet never judges you. Pet wags its tail, whatever version of animal it is, whatever excitement it shows, and says, hey, you're here, I love you, scratch my neck, and let's go get some lunch. They always want lunch, dinner or breakfast or snack. I mean, most animals, very few say no. My dog never has said no to a snack in his whole life. He doesn't know what no means there. Now, with that silliness but sweetness done, I want to address another thing and direct you to something. Sadly, often the end of a pet's life is filled with pretty painful imagery. Often there's been the pet has gotten out and gotten hit by a car or some other incident like that. And many of us know, tragically, in some of the areas where I guess we've encroached on nature and the same, where coyotes, packs of coyotes will get cats and other small animals, and often people see the result of that. And it's those are horrible images, or the traffic image accident. And even pets who have been stricken by cancer, if we medically intervene, by the time they die, they often don't look like them. It's just like with people, the cancer eats them up. And so sometimes the last image we have or hear about our pet is a very difficult image. In the original Grief Recovery Handbook, we wrote an essay, about a page and a half long essay called Stuck on a Painful Image, which appears on page 157 of the original Grief Recovery Handbook. But now in the Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss, this new book, a parallel but modified version of that essay appears on page 113. If you or anyone you know is stuck on the imagery of the end of your pet's life, we strongly recommend you read this essay. It will help you, in part because it will help by acknowledging how painful that image is for you. Instead of, you know, a lot of people say, oh, don't think about it. Well, excuse me, how do you not think about something that important? How do you just say, oh, don't think about it? It doesn't even make sense. So if someone calls me with a horrible image like, oh my gosh, what a diabolical last image you have of the pet you loved. And then I'm going to pause after acknowledging and say, gosh, I imagine you have a million other memories too. Can you remember the first time you saw little Fido? And they're going to smile. And on the phone, I'll see the smile and they're going to tell me the day when they went to pick their pup out of the litter or their kitty or whatever animal, horse, cow. It doesn't matter what the animal is. They will have a story at the beginning, not that different. If I say, do you remember the first day you met or saw the woman who became your wife or the man who became your husband? Everyone has a story. And when I take them back to that image after acknowledging the painful last image, it helps me help them realize they have thousands and hundreds of thousands of images of their pet who died, but they're stuck on the last one. And by acknowledging the pain of the last one, we get to look at all of them. It'd be unfair to you or anyone else to only remember one image out of thousands. It just isn't fair to the relationship. And so this essay will help you and help you help others. I mean, I don't care if you go to the bookstore and sit down on the floor and read page 113. I think it's page 113 and 14 of the new book, the Pet Loss book. It will be life-altering in a positive way for you or anyone you know who's stuck. Now, one more thing before we get to the webinar kind of part of the show today. If someone calls me who's struggling with a pet loss, after I talk to them for a few minutes, I'm going to direct them to the library or bookstore to get a copy of the Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss, which is written by me, Russell Friedman, with Cole James and John W. James. Cole James is John's son, the founder's son. And what I'm going to tell them, the same thing I'll tell you here, go to the library bookstore, get a copy of that book, read the first four chapters, which is through page 53. It's kind of like part one, through page 53, and then call me. At that point, you may be inclined to want to get some help or need a little help deciding to do the work in the book. If you read those 53 pages and it doesn't appeal to you, don't call me back. But I want you to do that. Also, I want you to hear this, and I'm going to promote this a little throughout this show. Our fundraising, we're a nonprofit, and we're fundraising this year called the Library Project. We're raising money so that we can get books in every library, in every public library in America. There are 21,000 libraries and branches, so we got to do some big old fundraising. Go to our website at www.griefrecoverymethod.com. There'll be a way for you to access online donating so that every $10 you give will give a couple of books to libraries around the country. Or you can buy some directly, the books, and give them to your librarian with a note that it's something that you found very, very helpful for you. So with all that set up, we're going to take a quick break here on Moving Beyond Loss on HealthyLife.net Radio, and then we're going to come back and have our own little mini webinar. See you in a minute.
Inspiration and motivation is just a podcast away at hrnradio.com.
Hi, this is Russell again. I'm Moving Beyond Loss, www.griefrecoverymethod.com, here on HealthyLife.net Radio. Holiday time 2014, and the publication of our brand new book, The Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss. And now we're going to shift and kind of go to kind of a webinar format, because by the time you hear this, there will be a real webinar on www.tributes.com that you can go to the archives. It'll be pretty new by the time you hear about this, and you can listen to this whole hour-long webinar on pet loss. And what it is we had the community of people who go to tributes.com, which is a memorial website for people and animals, and we asked them to send in their questions. So these are real questions from real grievers dealing with. And you'll hear some of the questions. You'll hear the questions. Some really difficult things. So we thought we'd do this here so you can get the benefit of these real questions and our real answers to them. So the first one came from a woman named Alicia who said, how do you handle those, quote, well-meaning relatives, friends, and colleagues who try to help you by saying, you're lucky. Mushu was only a cat. My father just died from chronic lymphocytic leukemia. I cared for him night and day. Unquote. How do we reply to this, or is it better to say nothing? I mean, so here what you have is a well-meaning, loving friend. They're still well-meaning and loving, totally ill-informed, comparing death of a pet, of a cat, to death of a human. And then adding into the caregiving of having to be there every day for someone dying of a dread condition. As if any of this goes together, the truth is it doesn't. All grief is experienced 100%. Period. No exceptions to that. We never compare losses. We don't compare death of a pet to death of a pet. We don't compare death of a human to death of a human. We certainly don't compare death of a human to death of a pet. We don't compare death to divorce, but we don't compare divorce to divorce. What's the point? We don't compare. Because when we compare, we minimize. And if I have a room full of people, I will always do that thing that says, how many of you are familiar with the famous thing, I was unhappy about having no shoes until I met the man who had no feet? Everybody knows that. And it's a great little teaching device for children on a certain aspect of, you know, life and certain realities. But it is a worse setup in the world for this idea of comparison. Because if I have a room full of grieving people, and the rule is, I was unhappy about no shoes until I met a man who had no feet, how many grievers can be in the room? One. The one with the worst list of losses. Her mom died, her mom and dad died, his mom, dad, and brother died. We go around, and the one who has the longest list of losses gets to stay and grieve, and everyone else has to feel better because their list isn't as long. And I hope you hear how crazy that is. Now, if we just switch it to pet, so she had one dog die, she had a dog and a cat, dog, cat, horse, dog, cat, two horses and a ham, and the person with the longest list gets to feel bad, and everyone else is okay because their list of grief isn't as long. Hopefully that sounds as crazy as it is. Okay? I'm going to bring up an interestingly odd topic. This won't make sense to you in context, but it does to me. Recently, Bill Cosby's in the news for some very bad reasons. But it also reminded me, and probably most people, of that tragedy several years ago, which happened right here in California, where his son was stopped, his car was found, he was killed, some thugs killed him. As tragic as that was, there was something else that made me crazy as a grief recovery guy. Every news report I heard, radio, TV, and for months, they'd say, Bill Cosby's only son died. Now, sounds okay just as a sentence, maybe, until you realize Bill Cosby had four daughters and a son. And by saying his only son died, it made the girls, the four young women, into nobody. Because the son became more important. It's like, wait a minute, you don't need to say only, just say his son died. It's devastating for that. The fact that it was his only son, does that add a dimension? I don't know, I haven't talked to Bill. But what it did was minimize the lives of the four women who are his daughters. You know, and just, so it's just a little interesting point here about, it's a comparative statement, only son, only being a comparative word. Now, Alicia's question was, how do we reply to this, or is it better to say nothing? You know, it's a great question, and once someone throws that line at, you're lucky it was only a cat. Only is a big bold letters here. The fact is the cat may have represented her heart and soul and everything emotionally meaningful for her. Without her being any, and she may have a husband, a wife, and children. She may have a totally normal life, but the cat will have a meaning to her different than all those other people or other events. And the truth is, when you're a griever, Alicia, you can't be an educator. I had to learn this a long time ago when my mother-in-law died. And I was going to the funeral, and I was already at grief recovery for many years. And my partner, John W. James, the founder, said, Russell, remember, today you're a griever, not an educator. Because at that point, my heart and soul need to be focused on my feelings, about the death of my mother-in-law and my feelings with my spouse and her daughter and her brother, because that was what that was about. So I didn't need to teach anyone. And I can remember, as this correlates, Alicia, to a dog, when our dog Zoe was in very near the end of her life, and we were at the vet's office. She'd had cancer. We'd spent thousands of dollars, and of course it didn't cure. And we're sitting there, and this lovely couple is sitting next to us, an older couple. And they find out what's going on and that Zoe may not have much longer. And this older man says to me and Alice, my spouse, he says, "Well, when she dies, you should go immediately out and get another dog." Replace the loss, basically. And, I mean, saying that to me, who educates on not ever saying that, that's hard. I mean, it's, you know, it's the kind of thing where you might want to whip around on someone and say, "Hey, what, are you crazy?" But I didn't. I had learned something that I want to pass on to Alicia, and I just said, "You know, thank you very much. I really appreciate your concern." And then without him knowing, I just kind of turned away. We were sitting, you know, in a waiting room. I just turned away and started talking with my spouse. He didn't realize I was cutting him out of any further conversation. I did it gently enough so it wasn't abrupt. And I just said, "Thank you. I really appreciate your concern." Because otherwise I was going to have to sit there and tell him how bad I felt about what he had said and put him in, you know. And again, is it okay that he didn't know better? No. One of the reasons the Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss is finally published is so we can get the information about that kind of thing out there so people will stop saying that. Grieving people tend to isolate. Grieving pet owners tend to isolate more. Why? Because of those kind of things, Alicia, that you heard. I don't want you to isolate. I want you to be able to grieve fully, complete, fully do the work in the book. But I also want you to have a little self-protection. Say, "Thanks, appreciate your concern. I'll think about that." And then move away. Just go get away from the person so you don't get in a debate or get in an argument. Because then you're distracted from your primary grief and put on another topic, about educational topic, when you need to be emotional. So thanks, Alicia, for a great question. I chose that one first because it's going to cover so many people. And the next, when we come back from a little break, we're going to talk about breed preference in terms of getting another dog. And I have some interesting answers to the question we're going to go with first. So, wow, this segment is on ultra fast. This is Russell on Moving Beyond Loss, HealthyLife.net Radio. Don't go far away.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Hi, Russell back, Moving Beyond Loss, HealthyLife.net Radio, and www.GriefRecoveryMethod.com. And we're doing kind of a mini webinar today, answering a few of the questions for a big webinar that will be up on www.tributes.com, where it's the Grief Recovery Center on that huge website. That website, by the way, gets about 4.5 million hits a month. So it's, you know, a huge memorial site, and we've done, this will be our 9th webinar there, each on a different topic, and this is the one on pet loss. Of course, we're focused on the new book, The Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss, that we're very excited about. Anyhow, the next question comes from a gentleman named Galen. And the question is, my Pembroke Welsh Corgi, also known as a PWC for those of us in the doggy world, my PWC Alfie died last February. I'm just now able to think about getting another dog. I have a strong breed preference for corgis, and yet some friends and family members are concerned that if I get another corgi, it will be too much of a reminder of Alfie and would sabotage my grief recovery. Can you offer me an opinion about that? Yes, Galen, it's a great question. I have a very strong opinion based on personal experience and preference also. So let me give you a little facts about me. About 9 years ago, my dog Max died. Now, in the book, Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss, Max is called Buddha, B-U-D-A. He was a Hungarian Vizsla, and Buddha and Pest are two of the cities, Budapest. And because my partner's son, Cole, who's a co-writer on the book, Cole's had a dog named Max die. We decided not to have two Maxes in the book. So my dog Max is actually called Buddha in the book. Anyhow, he was a magnificent Hungarian Vishnu. Loved him. And by the way, the level of tears and emotion from me in the weeks after Max died, I almost can't put in words. But it makes me understand, when I get people say they have more sadness, more pain, more feeling when their dog died than when their mom or their wife, and again, I know it's not meant, I just know what they're saying. Because of the different nature of the relationship, which I'll talk about later if I have some time, or maybe next show, I was astounded at the amount of feeling I had. But different than a lot of people, Galen, because of grief recovery, the moment Max died, I got to work doing the actions of grief recovery just the way they are in this book, the Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss. The things we're teaching people to do, I already knew how to do, so I did them right away. Does that mean I wasn't devastated, crushed, and sadder than... No, it just gave me the actions of completion, which are slightly different than the actions of adapting to life without someone you love. It's dual. There's grief on the one hand, grief recovery on the other. I have talked about it on this air many times, but here's where the distinction is. Living life on a day-to-day basis without my dog here, who was my heart and soul, who came to work with me at the Grief Recovery Institute. If you came to the Institute and you were sad, he would stand up on your knee and he would lick your tears. He was a real grief recovery guy. He was our tissue box. He'd wipe your tears away. But he was my heart and soul. I've never had that kind of relationship before. And so when he died, I was affected in a unique way. But I did the work of grief recovery, and X amount of months later, I don't remember how many, my wife Alice was equally devastated because that was her dog too. And one day I found myself online looking at Vishla rescues. And when I got home that night, because I don't like secrets, I said to Alice, I said, honey, I was looking at Vishla rescues online today, and she looked at me and said, well, do you think we're ready? I said, you know, I don't know. I'm just judging. I know we've done the grief recovery work, and I just followed my instinct. My instinct took me to the sites, and I was looking. So I feel ready based on what I'm doing and knowing I've done the complete grief recovery completion work. Now, by the way, in the book, The Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss, you'll see my total completion graph and letter, the whole process we do. You'll see it open just the way I did it when Max had died. And so... now, for me, Galen, I had no choice in the universe other than another Vishla. I wouldn't even consider it any other breed. My wife and I are totally breed-centric. We love Vishla. We love everything. That's why we got one, because we knew we were going to. Vishlas are Velcro dogs, you know, and ours was no exception. So when we got another dog, sure enough, it's a Vishla. His name is Baxter, and he's a world champion. He's a champion agility dog. He and I are going very soon to Orlando for the Yukonuba Invitational Agility Championships. We were the fourth-ranked Vishla team in America this year. Very proud of that. And I don't think the problem is the stimulus of the same brand. The problem is if you don't do the grief recovery work, Galen, it wouldn't matter what kind of dog you got or didn't get. If you didn't get a dog, you'd still be heartbroken and carrying around the unresolved grief of your dog who died. If you got the same breed, it would remind you that you were unfinished. If you got a different breed, it would remind you. So the real key here isn't the breed. The key is what you do to get emotionally complete. And I would hope that any dog you get, whether it's a corgi or any other kind, would remind you lovingly of the one who died. I don't want you to forget, and you can't. We're not talking about replacing your dog. We're talking about completing what's finished and having a new relationship. Because remember, as you know, I'm sure I don't have to tell you, dogs have their own personalities. And any dog you get, no matter the breed, will have his or her own personality. Same with cats, same with horses, same with any other animals. No two are the same. So we grieve and complete the unique relationship with the pet who died so we can start a new unique relationship with a new pet. Okay, so keep that in mind. Thank you. It's a great question. Breed centric is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, because I are one too. You and I are a match set. Now, next question comes from Michelle. Wow, powerful question. Should've, would've, could've. You know, should've, would've, could've. You know, that's how her note starts. Feelings of guilt about not knowing how ill she was and how it all happened so fast. If only Question mark, question mark. That's all she wrote. Now, we're sitting here, you know, you don't know what it was. It could have been an armadillo or a pet. We don't know what kind, but you sure know what it means. Shoulda, woulda, coulda. Not knowing if we did the right thing. And in this case, and boy, I can relate to this one. My dog Max, Buddha, who died, he seemed fine. We thought he was 6 or 7 years old. He was a rescue. One day in the park on a Friday, all of a sudden he didn't seem right. Saturday, and Sunday I took him to the vet. And on that Sunday, I took him to the vet, and the vet x-rayed him, and he had terminal cancer, inoperable. He had gotten that sick, literally what looked like overnight. And when I saw that question, I thought, wow, I remember what I had to go through thinking, had I missed something? You know, you try to be a detective. Were there signals? Were there signs? And then you have to remind yourself, you're not a vet, you're not, you know. And yet he was a healthy dog, went to the vet on a regular basis. They never spotted it, never spotted anything. So let me close that question for you with this phrase, Michelle. Guilt implies intent to harm. And I can't see anything in your question that implies you ever would have done anything with intent to harm your pet. So I want you to lighten up on yourself. I want you to go to the library or bookstore, get a copy of the Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss. I want you to work on the relationship with the pet. And then you can apologize for what you may not have seen or noticed, with the awareness that you wouldn't have the ability. You're not a vet. You're also not a palm reader. How could you figure things out? Dog can't tell you. And also understand this. Dogs in particular, if it was a dog, hide their when they're weak, they hide it, because in survival they can't look weak or they'll get killed. So dogs will even hide the truth from their owners, not because they're devious, because that's a survival instinct. Anyhow, wow, this is way shorter. This hour has flown by. We may pick up and do more of this next month. In the meantime, please go to the library or bookstore, get a copy of the Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss. In fact, I think it would be great if all the listeners flooded Amazon, broke down their computer by ordering tens of millions of copies of this right away. Boy, am I a fantasy guy. Anyhow, but what I want, I don't care about money. Go to the library and get a copy. What I want you to do is to be able to have better information for yourself and friends. With all the love here for a holiday season, whether you're grieving or not, just get better information for you and others. This is Russell, Moving Beyond Loss on HealthyLife.net Radio and www.griefrecoverymethod.com.